We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. I just watched the New Orleans Pelicans score 28 points in half of a game. Michael? How soon should I slip my wrists and die?
Oh, wow. That's just getting straight to the point. You know, I mean, it was right, and who was watching it right alongside with you was Tyreke Evans, who didn't play in this game. I mean, there's a bunch of interesting storylines coming out of this game, both, you know, with the way the Pelicans played and this Tyreke Evans drama. And it's really a shame because before that, you know, with the Hawks and the Timberwolves game, I was actually in a pretty good mood heading into this one, but that quickly ended with maybe the worst first half we've seen all year.
Yeah, I mean, even the Philadelphia 76ers managed to score 30 in their first half in the game tonight.
Yeah, they gave up 69, but yeah.
It's true.
It was bad, and it was so many things that were frustrating. First of all, I know they ended the game with 18 three-pointers, but they really, you know, weren't taking any in that first half, something that, as I said in my preview, the Nets are actually at the bottom of the league with three-point percentage allowed. The Pelicans, obviously, high. The Pelicans were getting to the line. I mean, I think at one point, they had like an 11-2 free throw discrepancy, but they couldn't make any of their free throws today. And then, you know, when they weren't at the free throw line, they were shooting those long two-pointers that, you know, were just the bane of our existence at the beginning of the year. It was just – it was really ugly in every way.
It was the Eric Gordon special.
Oh.
I think that's what I might call it from now on. Because Gordon was garbage in his game. I am completely pessimistic now. And you're right. Like, if we had managed to do this podcast 3-4 hours ago, I would have had, like, a nice, mellow podcast talking about all the things that were good about this team. Being all happy. And this just left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, although I will say, I mean, this team was down 27 in the second quarter. And on a night like that where shots aren't falling, because there were a lot that went in and out. I mean, I would say double digits if you go back and watch the game that, you know, we're halfway down and bounce back out. And you're down 27 and you could see teams just throwing the towel or coast. I mean, they got this lead down to 7 a couple of times in the second half. So I take a little bit of positive away from that, that the team didn't just quit, that, you know, they kept pushing in the second half. Anthony Davis has another great game, you know, and we got to see a little bit more of Luke Babbitt. So I wouldn't say completely, you know, disappointed with nothing positive to say from this loss, but that first half was miserable. And yeah, the Eric Gordon special again. I mean, he had a couple of big shots in the second half of the Minnesota game, but this game was just, it was terrible for him. Sloppy ball handling, you know, missing almost everything, even missing his free throws. Again, as you've said multiple times, we just evaluate him different because he's making $15 million a year. And this, you know, teams with max players at the swing position shouldn't be having 28-point halves ever.
Yeah, right. Right, and you shouldn't have 7 points on 3 of 12 shooting often. But pretty much Gordon is shooting. Over the last, like, 5-6 games, he takes 12 to 14 shots, and he scores 9 points. I mean, it's just insupportable having a guy like that out there. I'm to the point where, you know, Austin Rivers, he didn't have a great game tonight. I'd rather see him have all Eric Gordon's minutes.
Yeah, I love the energies he plays with in any right. point of the game. You could put him in up 5, down 2, or, you know, trailing by 30, and he will play with the exact same energy and effort.
Yeah. Yeah, so you brought him up. I want to talk a little bit about Luke Babbitt. He has hit his threes in this game. He didn't in the previous game, but if you were told that they were signing Luke Babbitt as a poor man's Ryan Anderson, and you watch these couple games, are you happy with him or not feeling like he's going to be able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say that, you know, again, looking around the league as far as the cost that it took to get Babbitt. Again, if you follow the money, Dell Demps basically made that Tyshawn Taylor trade and used that money to pay for Babbitt's buyout and salary this year. So, you know, for the little resources that they had to give up in order to get him, I mean, I think he was probably the best guy out there available to play that poor man's Ryan Anderson role. I mean, you probably could have went and trade in an expiring contract to Toronto for Steve Novak, but he would be on your cap for multiple years. So, with Rhino being out either another month or so, or maybe even for the whole year, I think, you know, Dell made the best move possible to go get a guy who's, you know, a 60-70% version of Ryan Anderson.
Yeah. I'll say this, too. I remember watching Luke Babbitt, because when he came out, I actually really liked the numbers he had in college because he was one of those hyper-efficient college scorers. There are a lot of college scorers like, you know, Adam Morrison, who aren't that athletic, but they shoot a lot, so they score a lot, but they were never super efficient. But Babbitt was one of those guys who, you know, he was crazy efficient. Like, he was scoring 25 points a game on 17 shots. So I kind of thought he might come out and be able to do something, but when you watched him in Portland, he really was the guy who caught the ball. If somebody ran out on him, he was not interested. He wasn't doing anything else. He might, like, fake a dribble, but he was going to move the ball on. He didn't have a lot of confidence in his ability to do anything other than catch and shoot. He tried hard, but he didn't feel like a guy who had brought that swagger from college. Like, he'd been basically told by his team, you're going to be a shooter. That's what – you sit behind the three-point line and you shoot. So I think this is a guy, from what I've seen the past two games, who did himself a great amount of service by going overseas, taking a contract, and, you know, he could have gotten on a training camp roster here, but instead he took a nice-sized contract, went overseas, and was the man for an overseas team. He was their leading scorer. He was their best shooter. And he just learned that, hey, I am actually a pretty good basketball player because he's been aggressive. He's not one-dimensional, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my only real memory of Luke Babbitt in Portland was I remember we played a game against them in Portland, and he took a corner three from the left side, and it went in, but I always just felt it looked strange. And he actually shot it, and it hit the side of the backboard. Now, this is on a corner three. It hit the side of the backboard and angled in. I mean, it was a shot that was off by, you know, a good 6 or 8 inches, but just randomly clipped the side of the backboard and went in. And honestly, that was my only Babbitt memory in Portland. But I do feel, I mean, I agree. I feel like he's playing with a lot of confidence. I feel like he's playing with that hunger of he doesn't want to lose his spot in the NBA again. According to all reports, the second year is a team option for the Pelicans. So, you know, they kind of incentivized him to play hard. And I'm not expecting anything huge out of him, but I think that the presence of Luke Babbitt really does something for this second unit. And even, I mean, we saw him as a finishing five in the Minnesota game. If you look at specifically the Minnesota game, Dante Cunningham was covering him. When Cunningham was covering Babbitt, he was 18, 20 feet away from the basket. When Cunningham was covering Greg Steemsma, he was 6-7 feet away from the basket and always there to stop guard penetration. So whether he's making his shot or not, I just think the idea of Luke Babbitt and the way teams have to defend him changes so much about that second unit and possibly even the finishing five.
Yeah. So do you like – so basically Monty had always liked the idea of Davis Anderson being the front line. And both the Minnesota and the Brooklyn games, for a significant piece of each game, that's how he ran the front court, which is a pretty small front court when you look at it. Do you like that, those lineups?
I mean, it's not – I don't like this one as much as I like Ryan Anderson and Davis. But, yeah, I've always said – I mean, if you just have this idea of one side of the ball with taking both into perspective, you know, you're just – you're not looking at the game correctly. And yeah, I believe that you have Ryan Anderson and – Anthony Davis, and you go against a team like Sacramento with DeMarcus Cousins, are they going to have problems against a big guy like that? Yeah, they will, and almost everybody does. But the question isn't whether they can cover DeMarcus Cousins. It's whether the Pelicans have the bigger advantage with, you know, Cousins trying to come out and guard one of those two, or if Sacramento has the bigger advantage with Cousins in the post. And I think almost universally, you know, even some of these big centers you look at, I still don't see guys who are dominating and efficient in that role. So I just always think that the Anderson-Davis combination will be much harder for opposing teams to defend than vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah, I like having diverse lineups out there. And I think even if it wasn't super successful, throwing these kind of lineups out there makes the other team start adjusting and thinking about adjusting too. So it's a good idea to throw out these stretch fours, make them try to, oh, now I've got to figure this out, maybe make them counter, and then you can go back to what you were trying to do before. So I do like being able to have a versatile team off the bench again, because we didn't. When you have Steemsma and Withy and Ajinka as your alternate big men, there is really no offensive difference between those guys. I mean, maybe Ajinka can drop a mid-range a little bit better than either of them, but you're not going to take advantage of that because he's going to be on the bench with foul trouble anyways.
Right. So let's go back. I mean, let's go back to the beginning of the week. Couple of victories. First one against Atlanta. I mean, first of all, I am starting to feel bad doing this. Like, whenever I talk about a game, I feel like I'm not even talking about Anthony Davis anymore because we just know.
I know.
25 and 10, a couple of big defensive plays, whatever. Okay, let's get to the other guys who helped Davis win this game. But, I mean, he was great. It was actually a really fun duel to watch with him and Paul Millsap and Davis. You know, they were back and forth all night, but Davis clearly got the better of it in the final couple minutes. But to me, the key X factor to this game. There was basically a secondary matchup between Anthony Morrow and Kyle Korver, and Korver's been playing at a quasi all-star level this year. You know, my friend who works for the Hawks says he's the team leader, is the guy that, you know, if you want to talk about anybody being untouchable or untradeable on Atlanta, it's Kyle Korver. He's just, you know, the guy that teammates love, coaching staff, you know, the front office all love. And Anthony Morrow, you know, was on him for much of the second half. They defended Korver with Morrow. He trailed all the screens. And then on the other side, Morrow hit the big shots. I really think that battle with Morrow coming out with the advantage over Kyle Korver swung this game.
Yeah, Morrow, he's interesting to me because he could be such a bad defender, but when his offense is actually going, his defense picks up a notch. Like, he's one of those guys who just, like, or even, I can't even say that now. If he has, like, a big defensive play, suddenly he just feels like, it feels like he's more pumped up and he's more into the game in every part of it. It can be a little dangerous at times because if he hits a couple big shots, suddenly he feels like he's hero ball man. And he'll always, this has happened in every game he's had, like, a run where he's hit a few threes. He'll catch the ball, fake the three if they're too close to him. He'll then do like a couple dribbles between the leg without really moving, and then he'll flip a shot from with a foot over the 3-point line, which is, doesn't have a prayer of going in. But I don't know. He can be so hot and cold, and it's really enjoyable when we can see him hot. And it's obvious what they decided to bring him in to do was to fill that role. Do you think that this is like something he could continue at all, or do you really think he'll go through more stretches where, like earlier in the season, he couldn't really get anything going?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, they are making him a focal point of the offense. I think, I mean, honestly, where I think he's most effective is in transition. I mean, a lot of the shots he hit, you know, were when the Pelicans got the break. The one big one, you know, actually, I don't remember if it was this game or Minnesota. It might have been Minnesota, but the dagger three he hit in transition after falling to the floor on the defensive end. But I think that's where he's most effective, and you're right. He starts to get his confidence going at times, and that usually leads to an ill-advised shot. But as far as the defensive end, I actually think a guy like Korver is perfect for him to play against because Korver's always moving and flying through those screens. So Morrow has a job that he doesn't really have to think about. He just trails them and just keeps going. I think where Morrow gets in big trouble on the defensive end is when his guy is just spotting up somewhere. Morrow always tends to overhelp or just watch the ball, and then the, you know, a guy gets open because of that. So I think, you know, if you could put Morrow on somebody who's a little bit more active, I think that will actually help out his defense because it's really just the off the ball stuff that's absolutely horrific to watch.
Yeah. So you didn't really answer the one question I had for you though. Do you think that this is just a mirage, or do you think Anthony Morrow could be a bigger piece of that bench offense?
Well, no, I mean, if you're asking me every day, of course not. I mean, I think, you know, if let's say he plays in 82 games, do I think that he could give you a spark for 35 to 40 of those and then, you know, be not horrible in 20? Yeah. But honestly, I mean, you left, but I don't know if Ray Allen does more than that. You know what I mean? Like, okay. Ray Allen will hit the big shots and we'll see. But, you know, I'm sure if we looked up and down Ray Allen's game log, he's had a bunch of stinkers or non-factor games. And, of course, I'm not comparing Morrow to Allen in his prime, but I'm saying right now that kind of role where, you know, you have another guy who's a supporting character that could come out off and go for 20 on a random night or hit the big three-point shots and not give you much else. Yeah, I think he could do that 35, 40 times a year, which, I mean, if you're paying somebody the minimum salary, you would die for that kind of production.
Right. So you brought up this Atlanta Hawks game. So I know you don't want to talk about them.
Uh-oh.
But Brian Roberts had a pretty big game. So do you have any words of apology for Brian Roberts?
I mean, he's playing well. He's playing well offensively. It was interesting. It was really a game where it felt like Jeff T kind of stopped being aggressive pretty early in this game. Didn't seem to be playing with a lot of confidence or some of the aggression that I've seen this year. But I mean, Roberts is, it's undeniable that he's a very good shooter. That's not, you know, never been the problem with him. You know, the problem's been the over dribbling and lack of ball movement. I actually think he's been helped a bit by the fact that it's become so abundantly clear that Anthony Davis is the number one, number two, and number three option on, you know, most offensive sets. I think, you know, they're getting the ball to Davis more in the high post and, you know, working the offense through him or just letting him isolate more and more. So I think Roberts has been able to go, you know, back to more of just a shooting role and not having to try to play make or just pound the ball as much. But no, hit a huge shot in this game, hit a huge shot in the Minnesota game. You know, even though in both games there were some mistakes before his big shot that, you know, you could argue were part of the reason why he had to hit a big shot to close it out anyway. But no, I think a solid game, still giving you, in my opinion, a below average defense, but the offense is coming on and he doesn't seem to be pounding the ball as much as we saw earlier in the season.
Yeah. So that was like my big problem with him early in the season was he would catch the ball and then he was looking to get a pick and go and wasn't looking to pass anywhere. He's got a very clear talent set that offensively he could take a pick and roll, come off that pick, and if he's given room, he can drill the shot at a pretty nice rate. He's not getting all the way to the rim very often, but he's got such a reliable jump shot as a shooter, he's fairly good there. You should just expect that if you're running a pick and roll, if your man is actually rolling and not popping, Brian Roberts is not going to get the ball to him. He doesn't have like that pocket pass skill. He can't, you know, find the guy over the top very often. And in fact, the few times that he does go over the top on a pick and roll, he's basically doing it like a football quarterback does, you know, his route passing. He just assumes the guy's going to be there, which doesn't always turn out well if somebody gets bumped. But just as an offensive player, that is valuable to be able to run off a pick and roll and drill that mid-range shot. I mean, that's part of why you run a pick and roll is to get that shot. So
yeah, I wish he had, or maybe he does and we don't see it, but I wish he had a little bit more range with that, because you're right, when he takes that mid-range shot and it's fairly open, I'm usually confident that'll go down. It would be nice to, you know, have that same exact play and take that same exact shot from behind the arc if you could extend it back a couple feet.
Kind of like Drew used to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Drew, I miss you.
Isn't that sad? Like, we're 50 games in now to the season and we're talking about what we used to see from the guy we just acquired.
Right.
And
yeah, we just spent the last 20 minutes talking about, like, Luke Babbitt.
Yeah.
Because he's almost as good as Ryan Anderson. Yay! Brian Roberts, he could do some stuff that Drew used to be able to do, but Drew did it better. Yay!
Right, I mean, these two games, I mean, I guess Tyreek played in the Minnesota game, but this win against Atlanta, I mean, if you and I from now went back to our preseason selves in a Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure type of way, and talk to them and told them that on this date that the team would be without Drew Holiday, Ryan Anderson, Tyreek Evans, and Jason Smith, I mean, I think we would have just predicted gloom, you know, doom and gloom, and wondered how this team would ever win a game. And after that Minnesota game, they were 7-3 in their last 10. So that really, you know, speaks to Anthony Davis. It speaks to the defense a little bit. I mean, this is a team that, you know, defensively, over the previous 10 games had really changed, you know, their defensive statistics. I mean, heading into the Brooklyn game, I don't have the new stats, but they had a defensive rating of 101 over their last 10 games. And I mean, to put that in perspective for people who don't know, that would be second in the league right now, tied with the Chicago Bulls, if that was their defensive rating over the entire season. So there, you know, there are some improvements here. There are some things to be, you know, optimistic about or proud of this team, considering how many guys that they're down. It just seems like, you know, every time you start to get a little excited about this team or feeling good, they find a way to let you down in an entirely new way that you would never expect.
Yeah. So before we talk Minnesota, Tyreek Evans. So kind of ignored the elephant in the room. Tyreek, there's rumors about him saying he doesn't know his role on the team. And that there's, you know, some sort of internal issues that he and Monty are working out. Does that make any sense to you? Is it possible that somebody would sign a contract of that size, show up for training camp, go through training camp with the team, and just have the season start and have no idea what he's supposed to be, what the coach wants of him on the court?
I would say it's insane, but I feel like I said that this wasn't possible with the Monty Williams, Marcus Thornton issue a couple years ago. Like, I feel like I'm hearing some of the same things for Evans. For those who don't know, you know, these are quotes from a Sheridan Hoops article by a guy with my favorite name now of all writers. His name is Shlomo Sprung. So, I mean, by far my favorite.
Take that with a grain of salt.
My favorite writer's name, Shlomo Sprung. I just got him a couple Twitter followers. But he's, you know, he was asked if his role on the team has ever been discussed with Monty. And he said, quote, "No, we never talked about that. I haven't talked to him about it. We talk here and there, but I haven't talked to him about whose role or what role is whose on this team. I have more roles." But then he goes to say, "I have more roles than the team I was on before. So it's tough trying to adjust to all these spots." So at first he says he doesn't know what his role is. Then he says he has more roles than he's used to. So, you know, I don't really know how to read that other than it's clear that Tyreek Evans is confused. Either he's confused because Monty has talked to him and he's not really good at comprehension, or, you know, him and Monty have never really sat down and discussed roles. Either scenario, I mean, it's so hard for me to imagine. They're at this guy's doorstep at 12:01. He's an integral part to, you know, the build. I just can't imagine not making sure, you know, that me and this player are 100% clear on what's trying to be accomplished and what his role is both now and moving forward. It's really hard for me to imagine that.
Yeah. I think he knows what his role is. I honestly do. I think he's being asked to cover more positions than he's used to being asked to cover. Cause, you know, when he's off the bench, usually he's point guard. Sometimes he's shooting guard. When the finishing five, or if he's included in the final five, he is technically guarding small forwards, but usually he's the ball handler. That's got to be a lot of things you got to be handling at one time and know what you're supposed to be doing all at the same time. This kind of thing reads to me as I thought I knew what I was supposed to be doing, but I'm only getting 20 minutes a game at best now. So clearly I must not know what I'm doing. So I'm going to say something like, "Oh, I don't know what my role is. because if I was doing my role, I'd obviously be getting minutes. That's kind of how it reads to me.
I could see that. I could also see being some confusion. I mean, so let's think about this. He comes in, and the beginning of the preseason, the main five guys are all healthy. I think at that point, Dell and Monty are 100% on the page of what this team's supposed to look like and how it's going to play, and Tyreek probably is too. Then, you know, Tyreek gets injured. He misses the rest of the preseason, essentially. Comes back for the regular season, and boom, Ryan Anderson went down. So now, you know, he doesn't have that floor spacer in the second unit with him, which I think was a big part of the plan. Then Ryan Anderson comes back, and Tyreek starts flourishing. And
Davis goes,
you know,
down.
It's a clear role. Then Davis goes down, so now he has to rebound more and score more. Then, you know, Ryan, I mean, as I showed in my article on Saturday, there was this seven-game stretch where pretty much everybody was healthy, and Tyreek Evans's role was pretty clear. And he got about 32 minutes in that seven-game stretch. And, you know, he put up monster numbers, and, you know, there's no complaints, there's no issues, and everything's thriving. Then Ryan Anderson goes down, and we have the same problem of the lack of spacing. Then Drew Holiday goes down, and now what? Is he supposed to be more point guard? And, you know, so I could see where it might be confusing for him, because I really don't think that Monty could use him in the same role for more than a couple of games at a time throughout the season, because every time you look up, somebody else is hurt, and now you're not just the Ginobili who gives us a spark. Now you got to create two, or now you got to rebound more too, or now you got to take, as we discussed before, more outside shots, and you got to work on that because, you know, now we don't have the space in the lane anymore. So I could see where it could be confusing for Tyreek because due to all the injuries, he's probably had small conversations with Monty here and there where Monty asked him to do different things than the time before, just because, you know, he had to, because the team wasn't 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And now he's kind of hurt. He's having games where he's struggling mightily and things just aren't falling into place. So, I mean, honestly, I don't feel like this is a problem. I just feel like it's more of just frustration because the team's not working out the way you want it to. That's something that can poison you if it happens over a long time. But I'm not really that worried about it. Do you have? Are you thinking that this is like a warning sign?
Honestly, I mean, I remember this because you had the video going into the year of, you know, for the Pelicans to be all excited, and Marcus Thornton was one of the...
Are you going to bring that up again?
And I said back then that I saw some signs, you know, and that I didn't think Marcus Thornton was going to be with the team long. And at first, people didn't take it really that seriously. And then he kept getting benched. And then eventually he was traded. I mean, I've seen Monty try this tactic before. He's tried it with Marcus Thornton. He's tried it with Al-Farouq Aminu. He never really inspired Aminu or woke him up. He didn't break him down and build him back up. With Marcus Thornton, the situation just got worse. So I don't really believe in that. I think Monty Williams wants so bad for this generation of players to take accountability and have maturity like the guys that he played with in the 90s. And that's just that's not going to happen. I mean, it sucks to say, and, you know, generations change, and this one's not necessarily worse than the one before it, but it's different. And I don't know if we've ever seen yet Monty really know how to deal with, you know, one of these new generation of players that, you know, maybe they feel a little entitled, maybe you know, they need to be pampered a little, and Monty just always comes back to the same philosophy of tough love and throwing them in the doghouse. I haven't really seen it work yet, so it's hard for me to believe that it's going to work with Evans and things are going to turn around.
Well, aren't you Debbie Downer?
You asked for my opinion. Okay, every time.
No more opinion. Only give me happy opinions.
Yeah, every time you ask for my opinion, I'll just tell you everything's supposed to be great. But, I mean, it was interesting timing because for any who haven't read it, you know, our True Hoop, one of the godfathers, Kevin Arnovitz, wrote just a fantastic article on ESPN, New Orleans, New Era, Fight or Flight, and a big part of the article is talking about Dell Demps' decision making this summer and, you know, how he wanted to gather a bunch of guys who could, you know, not only 23 to 25, the young vets, as we've known, but the plan was to get a lot of guys who could penetrate, get the ball into the lane, and create ball movement. He thought Evans was miscast in Sacramento and, you know, The really tough decision was, you know, knowing that he had to go, if he went after Tyreek Evans, he'd probably have to lose out on Robin Lopez. And he made that decision because he says that, you know, it was easier to find a stopgap center than a dynamic scorer like Evans. So he made that decision. But I mean, that article's just about a little less than a week old now, but it's really interesting, you know, how it's playing out. And even if you read that article, it almost reads like Dell Demps and Monty Williams have two different visions, or at least don't fully see eye to eye 100% on the vision of this team. I mean, did you read the article? What did you feel on the Evans stuff? And did you also get the sense that maybe Demps and Monty disagree a little bit about how this team should play and what they should get moving forward?
Well, honestly, I think we've witnessed there's a difference in the mindsets there, because Monty does like a traditional center. He likes a guy, and if you read that, Monty brings up, well, we need a guy who's going to do some work, dirty work in the middle, and Dell just talks about how what we need are guys who can penetrate. And if you start penetrating, good things happen. And that's been true. If this team has a bunch of penetrating players, the offense has run very, very well. Those brief times where we've had those kinds of guys available all at one time. I don't know if I saw like a huge, I didn't like, it didn't click in my mind that there was some disconnect there.
Yeah, I mean, Monty just, he seems to keep, I mean, he says in the article that ideally he would want a big body center next to Davis, and I just don't know how that, I mean, how do you have both that and guard penetrators who get into the lane and kick the ball out in a Euro ball fashion? Like, how do you have both of those things? So,
I can't answer that.
So,
get Pekovic, because I'm sure he's on the market and cheap.
Yeah, but I mean, it's an interesting situation to monitor moving forward with Tyreek Evans. I just, you know, I mean, we'll know tomorrow night if he plays again. Maybe this was just a one-game thing to prove a point. But again, I really think Monty's coming from an era where that kind of stuff would work. And I just think he's a little bit disconnected with today's type of players, and he wants so badly. I mean, we read his comments all the time, even when he was talking about LeBron and how LeBron is going against boys and Michael Jordan is going against men. It's clear that he pines for this era, you know, back in the mid to late 90s, but it's not coming back. Like, the players have changed. And if you just keep wishing that they would be like the guys from the 90s, or keep trying to motivate them the way that guys in the 90s were motivated, like, it's just, it's not going to work. And I hope Monty's learned something from the Marcus Thornton situation, and I hope that this Tyreek could be salvaged, because as you see in my piece, when he's healthy and when he has the right supporting cast around him, I would argue that in the specific situation, he's been our second best player this year. So, you know, I really hope that they could get it back on track.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do want to bring up one thing. Like, part of the, I don't necessarily know if there's like a huge discrepancy between players today and players in the 90s, because 90s was when the dollars started rolling in. But you also got to remember what teams Monty played on. The Pat Riley Knicks. I mean, those guys wanted to murder you and were all tough and talk tough and acted tough. And, I mean, if that's what you grow up in, that's probably what you're going to want. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just at some point, you got to start complaining. You got to stop complaining that the rules of the game have changed and just learn what the rules of the game are and figure out a way to win with the new rules. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, the Tyreke Evans issue bears watching, and it really seems to have stemmed from our next game, which was the game against Minnesota. He came back for this one, but he had one of his worst games ever, and specifically Monty pointed out his recklessness and basically called him a ball hog in different words in the post game interview. And it was, I mean, in a lot of ways it was typical Tyreke, but in a couple of ways, it was a little bit of, he was playing more out of control than usual and not really looking for his teammates like he normally does. So really struggled in this game. Monty sat him down. I mean, the finishing five for this game was, and this was much to people's chagrin because Austin Rivers had been playing so well, but Brian Roberts, Eric Gordon, Anthony Morrow, Luke Babbitt, and Anthony Davis. Tyreke was sitting on the bench in the final stretch, and honestly, I think it was the right call, and I thought Monty, you know, had some master strokes in the fourth quarter to get this team back into the game and then pull out the victory.
Yeah, and Tyreke's play in that game did not earn him any additional minutes after what he got. It was pretty bad, and it was like he was like the centerpiece of frustration for me in the game, because like even when he was driving into the paint, but this was a team that was so obviously packing the paint that there wasn't any room for him to move in there. It resulted in turnovers. It resulted in really bad shots. And he just kept going in. And then finally he decided, well, maybe I can't get that done, so I'm going to take some jumpers. But they weren't smart jumpers either. It wasn't like I'm taking a jumper at second with 7 seconds left in the shot clock because we moved it around. It was more like everybody flattened the defense. I'm going to stand here at the top of the thing and instead of driving this time into the teeth of defense that's waiting for me, I'm going to waste some time and then jack up a 2-point.
Yeah.
So it was not Tyreke Evans-ish at all, in my opinion, but I've also felt like he's been hurting for the past few games. So I don't, you know, he went out with the rib injury. I mean, he's got all kinds of things going wrong with him at the moment, so I don't know what to read there.
Yeah.
I just wish his team was some decently amount of healthy so we could see what that was another line from that article you're talking about that Kevin Arnovitz wrote that, you know, was 100% accurate, where Dell says it's really hard for me to evaluate what we have.
Yeah. And he does say in there that the offense was unstoppable when healthy, and they were, I mean, the numbers are insane.
All right, so in this game, I just had one question for you. Kevin Martin, Kevin Love. Martin has had a career where he's like mastered the throwing his own body into his defender and then flinging himself sideways and throwing up a shot like he'd just been fouled, but keeping his balance so he can actually hit the shot pretty well. Has Kevin Love played too long with Kevin Martin and is now buying 100% into the flop fest that is Kevin Martin?
I mean, I think Love knows that he's considered a superstar in the league, so he's doing the smart thing and, you know, playing that up. I mean, just watching him in this game, and Love was not 100%. I'd be shocked if he was even 80%. I mean, he didn't play the next game. He didn't play the game before. missed all of his three-pointers, had that one missed layup where, you know, he was hobbling on the other end of the court. And I still thought that this guy basically playing on one leg was just was phenomenal. And it was hard not to imagine, you know, I think if there's a guy that's, if you were to say the best player likely to get traded or move teams in the next 18 months, I would think you would have to put Kevin Love at the very top of that list. And it was just, it was so hard to watch this game and not imagine, you know, what a Love Davis pairing could be. And, you know, and thinking about the fact that I would give up any two guys on this roster. And you might even be able to talk me into trading three guys, for the opportunity of Kevin Love. I mean, the things that those
might be able to, like, who would you hold in reserve other than Anthony Davis?
Well,
if you're
saying, if you asked me for Drew Holiday, Tyreke Evans, and Ryan Anderson, that might be tough for me to give up all three. But, but I mean, I'd honestly probably still do it, but,
yeah, I would too.
But yeah, I mean, the outlet pass, I mean, we have a guy in Al-Farouq Aminu. It was funny on back-to-back plays. On one play, Kevin Love took an outlet pass, you know, threw it 80 feet on a dime, got a player a layup. Next play, I'm not even joking, Al-Farouq Aminu gets a rebound and throws the outlet pass right into the hands of a Minnesota Timberwolves. Like, that's how big the disparity is. But, I mean, yeah, Love is definitely playing it up to the refs, but, you know, that's what a superstar does. And on a night where he wasn't hitting anything, he still got 26 points because he got to the line 17 times.
Yeah, he flopped. He's a flopper. There was one play in there where he didn't get the call for this, at least, but he literally just leapt sideways, like scrunched his whole body up and threw the shot up. Like, somehow, I don't even know how you would make that movement if somebody did push you or touch you. I mean, it was so exaggerated. I was just staring at him like, well, you look like a moron.
Oh, that moron helped his team get to the free throw line almost three times as much as we do. I mean, it's getting sickening at this point how much teams get to the free throw line, and I really don't care what it takes. I mean, the Pelicans can't afford to keep losing this battle. I mean, this year, like, it's
28 fouls in that game.
I mean, it's amazing, but, you know, we have, if that's what refs respond to, you have to do it. I mean, I just see too many times Tyreke Evans or Eric Gordon going into the mouth of defenders and they don't sell it, so it doesn't get called. I mean, at some point, if you know that if you sell it, you're going to get the foul and you refuse to, who's that on? You or the refs? So.
Huh? So do you think that Minnesota is happy with their decision to trade Trey Burke for Gorgui Dieng and Shabazz Muhammad?
I think that, you know, they would probably justify it now and say it's a long-term thing. But, no, they could have made other picks. They could have got the Greek Freak with one of those picks and,
yeah,
you know, even if they walk out of there with the Greek Freak and Jang, I think that you could say that it was a solid move. So I just never understood the getting the Shabazz Muhammad. That's basically a throwaway pick. So, I think they'll definitely live to regret that. But I don't think necessarily the trade itself was bad. I think, you know, the point guard was the position that had value there, unless you're going to take Steven Adams, which they didn't need. And, moving back and getting two picks was probably the right move. They just picked the wrong guys.
Yeah. Okay. So
Jackson is throwing up 58 in the D League, baby.
Yeah. Oh, man. I don't even know what to say about that. It's like, on one hand, you're like kind of excited that maybe he'll come in next year and be interesting, but then you're also scared because he's going to come in and is Anthony Davis ever going to touch the ball? You put Pierre Jackson on a team with Tyreke Evans, Eric Gordon, Brian Roberts, and Drew Holiday, and Ryan Anderson. I mean, Davis is going to be the hardest person to get the ball to in that entire crew.
I'll do a little spoiler alert. I don't think there's any way all those guys are on the team next year.
Don't think so, huh?
No.
All right, so do we actually want to spend any more time talking about Brooklyn? Because I don't want to talk about Brooklyn. Screw Brooklyn.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't think there's much to say there beyond the I was impressed with how hard that Austin Rivers played, and again impressed that they came back in. But the one thing that I'm just thinking the whole time I'm watching that game is that I honestly cannot wait for the Al-Farouq Aminu era to end. Huh. Like, it's just time. There's so many things that just don't fit with him on this team. And, you know, even the I don't understand the vision that Dell has. If you want a bunch of guards that penetrate and kick, how can you have a guy that teams don't have to even respect on the perimeter? Yeah, I think he could be a decent backup small ball power forward. But, I mean, we have so many of these 7th, 8th, 9th, 10 men type of guys already under contract. I'm not paying Aminu $4 million a year just to come off the bench and back up four. I mean, that was just the thing that continued to stick out in my mind watching this game, is I can't wait for this Aminu era to end, because honestly, you're going to have a couple of these type of nights offensively every month when you just have a pretty much a black hole at the wing. And then obviously now we have what is essentially a black hole at the center position too. The Aminu era just can't end soon enough for me.
I'm not going to argue with you. I'm just going to say, all right. So let's keep moving. This team gets to play two games before the All-Star break, and hopefully everybody in New Orleans is going to have a fantastic All-Star break. But first they have a game tomorrow night in Toronto, and then a game Wednesday at Milwaukee to close out their pre-All-Star games. Who is more interesting to you, Toronto or Milwaukee?
I'll let you take Toronto first, and then I'll pop in with Milwaukee afterwards.
Really? I did not expect you to take take Milwaukee, so I don't know anything about Toronto at all.
I'm Robert Frost, baby.
I'm kidding, anyways. I know stuff about Toronto. They don't have Rudy Gay anymore, and they're now suddenly way better than they used to be.
Kyle Lowry's a beast again, one of our old favorites.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry. So,
and, the one thing I will is, if you haven't listened to it yet, Charles Barkley mispronounces Jonas Valanciunas worse than anybody that you have ever tried to pronounce. I mean, he took the Schwann title in just one fail swoop. It's really something that all of our listeners should listen to, especially coming off your DJ Augustin performance from last week. So, if anybody hasn't get the chance, just Google Charles Barkley and Jonas Valanciunas, and it was pretty interesting to hear him basically beat Schwann at his own game.
You're really tempting me to call this guy Deemer DeRozan. So DeMar DeRozan, this is he got the All-Star nod over Kyle Lowry. Because he's averaging 22 points a game, and therefore he must be the best player on his team. At least that's how I think some coaches feel. I don't really get it. Lowry is the complete player and a better defender, and he's infinitely more efficient. I mean, Lowry gets 1.3 points per shot compared to DeMar DeRozan's 1.2 points per shot. But here is the thing. Like, I keep hearing DeMar DeRozan compared to Rudy Gay. That, you know, he's very similar. They're both volume scorers. DeRozan is a bit of a volume scorer, but we're not talking like Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay, his best year in Memphis, his best anywhere other than his current stretch in Sacramento, which is so bizarre, he never averaged more than like 1.1 points per shot. And DeRozan's above that right now at a nice healthy clip because he gets 7.3 free throws per game. That beats anything Rudy Gay has ever sniffed at any point in his career. So DeRozan got the All-Star nod. He's not Rudy Gay. He's better than him, but he's not quite as good as Kyle Lowry. So I'm kind of annoyed that Lowry didn't get the spot. But this is a team that basically Valanciunas, who is supposed to be their future superstar, they basically have a running gag where they call him Pump Fake on the local blogs, because apparently he has the worst pump fake in the NBA, and he always tries it, but it looks nothing like his actual shot, so no one ever buys it. So just when you guys are watching this game tomorrow night, keep an eye on that. Look for the famous Jonas Valanciunas pump fake and see if you can spot it. He's a decent rebounder, but he's only scoring 10.8 points per game, and he's pretty much average PER. So he lines up next to Amir Johnson, who's always one of my favorite underrated big men in the league. He's pretty solid as well. This team is not scary in any way, but it's not a team that you can just go in and think you're going to win. It's a lot like the game in Brooklyn tonight. That's a team that, yeah, you have a pretty decent chance of winning, but you're not going to, like, you shouldn't ever feel comfortable going in that you're going to win. So, I don't know. I expect if Rudy Gay was there, I'd expect a big game from him. Since he's not, we should be expecting a big game from Grievous Vasquez.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet on that.
Really? Because he's not going to get enough minutes because Lowry's so solid?
Because he's not a good player, just like he wasn't a good player. Everybody was all over him, and
he's got a PER of 10.
He's terrible. He always was. He put up fake stats. Monty said it himself. He's not a good player. No, I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, Terrence Ross luckily has already had his one explosion game. I don't know.
Patrick Patterson? Stretch four, sort of?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, and that's the thing that's been the best thing about our defense the last 10 games is pretty much everything has stayed exactly the same, but teams are making about 1.5 less threes against us, shooting about 6% worse. And literally everything else is pretty much the same with the defense. They've just played a little bit more conservatively on the pick and roll. The rotations have been better, and they've protected the three-point line. I mean, to me, if there's, you know, if I'm looking at guys that are going to hurt us, it's going to be people who score in the paint or get to the free throw line. So maybe my dark horse for this game would be Tyler Hansbrough. I mean, seriously, we just watched, you know, another one of the Plumlee brothers go off for seemingly a career game against us. So it,
come on, I would not take Hansbrough to do anything. That guy's terrible.
Yeah, well, what would you have said about Mason Plumlee before today? So I think, again, if you look at this Pelicans defense, by far the worst thing is that this team is just fouling at an unbelievable rate, and opponents are getting, you know, anywhere between 25 and 30 free throw attempts on any night. So Hansbrough's a guy that actually draws them at a pretty high rate amongst their non-regular, you know, star caliber players. So I'll go with him as the X factor.
Okay. My prediction is Pelicans lose by 4 because it's in Toronto and it's on the second night of the back-to-back.
Yeah. I still don't understand how the optical illusion of the Raptors sign on the under the basket. I've been honest.
I actually like it. I
love,
think it's cool.
I mean, I love it, and it gets me every time. So I watch for that, and I also watch Raptors games because it is the only team that broadcasts games in Punjabi. And
do you actually watch it in Punjabi?
I've tried numerous times. Yeah. So I'm working on my Punjabi a little bit. So I do watch some Raptors games, but yeah, I'll agree. I mean, this team is just a totally different team on the road. They can't really overcome the slow starts on the road. So I'll say Raptors by 8 in this one.
Okay. Well, take it away about Milwaukee.
Oh,
and your best buddy, O.J. Mayo.
That you went with an easy one. I want to hear it just one time before I head into my preview.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Okay, first of all, it's Giannis.
Okay. Let me actually try. Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo. Antetokounmpo.
Okay.
Try it.
Antetokounmpo.
Okay.
Dikembe Mutombo.
More Kounmpo, but I mean, other than that, it was good. Antetokounmpo. But anyway, yeah, I mean, this is a team that it's reminded me a little bit of the Pelicans team from 2 years ago. I mean, there's just mysterious injuries and illnesses all over the place. Delfino's been out for a while. He's out for the entire year, but now Caron Butler has an ankle sprain and is out. Ilyasova, Luke Ridenour, and Ekpe Udo all missed a game the other night with, you know, just a quote unquote back injury or you know, an illness, whatever. Mayo and has been out. Larry Sanders left the game on Saturday with, get this, blurred vision. That is the injury that the team is going with. Larry Sanders is not playing because of blurred vision. So
maybe he's going to go hang out with Robin Thicke.
There, yeah, nice one. I like it. I like that you're staying up with the contemporary culture. So, yeah, I mean, they just, you don't know who's going to play on any given night. I would say the only, you know, Giannis has been exciting. I mean, I've seen redraft articles where he goes number 2 in almost all of them. I don't get it that much. I know he's a unique looking player, and because he's 19, he has all the upside and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if you just look at what he's actually done this season, nothing very impressive. I would say the only two players that have been solid for them this year are John Henson, who is really a poor man's Anthony Davis in almost every single way.
I still love the idea of Davis and him playing next to each other.
Yeah, I mean, he
that'd be sick.
He shoots over 52%. He's a guy that per 36 will get you 15, 10, 3 blocks. You know, just a poor man's Anthony Davis, really quality young player. And then the other guy who I know might surprise a lot of people is Chris Middleton. I mean, he's been a guy that's been in a lot of ways like I think you're seeing from him what you saw right before Ryan Anderson broke out. Like, I mean, obviously he's a different player. He's more of a wing, but he's a guy that kind of came out of nowhere. You don't expect much from. Wasn't, you know, a highly regarded guy heading into college, obviously heading into the pros. And he's just starting to find a bit of a niche. He's hitting his threes at a high percentage. He's been an efficient player for them this year. And it just, again, a different position. But you're starting to see you know, the same kind of rise from obscurity that I think you saw early in Ryan Anderson's career. But really, those are the only two guys who have been decent for them. I mean, Brian Knight has games where he just puts up ridiculous numbers offensively sometimes, but he hasn't been efficient at all. O.J. Mayo's been terrible. You know, Gary Neal had that incident with Larry Sanders and basically hasn't been playing. Everybody else is hurt. So, I mean, this is by every single measure, the worst team in the NBA and by a pretty significant margin.
Even Zaza's missed half his games.
Yeah.
Zaza Pachulia.
Yeah. It's a really bad team. I mean, they're worse offensively than defensively, but not by much. I mean, they are by far the worst offensive team in the league, but their defense is nearly as bad. They're a terrible, terrible team. I mean, they're not even competitive bad the way that Charlotte's been in the last couple of years. They're terrible, and it just cracks me up. This is a team that Bill Simmons had 15th in his power rankings this year, and this might be one of the worst teams I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I never really got why people liked Milwaukee that much. I mean, Brandon Knight was worse than Brandon Jennings. That's just reality, and Brandon Jennings is nothing to be, like, super excited about. So that's a downgrade. O.J. Mayo has been overrated since he was traded for Kevin Love, so start of his NBA career. I mean, he was always, like, a guy who somehow people thought was, like, a good scorer, but even when he was in Memphis, he was at best as bad as Rudy Gay. This is not a supreme scorer in any shape. John Henson, I would not have expected him to be as good as he is right now. I thought he was going to be a decent player, but he's being pretty solid. I mean, the only guy on here who I feel is underperforming what I expected is Larry Sanders. I expected him to be a lot better of a basketball player than he's shown this year, but he's made a lot of really bad decisions too. But he's never been like an offensive guy anyways. So, yeah, it's just kind of a train wreck. So, with that said, it's third game in four nights. It's in Milwaukee. People are going to be like, I just want to go home and party for the All-Star game. What do you think is going to happen in this one?
I mean, I think the Pelicans win this one. I think Anthony Davis has a monster game. I think that the break will be more of a reward than something that the guys are looking forward just to getting to and getting over with. I would say Pelicans by 12.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Pelicans are going to win by 7. So, and since I'm always right, everybody should go and put some money on this game. Because I'm sure the odds will be really in your favor.
Yeah. If you've gotten your taxes back early, go ahead and blow it all on one of Schwann's predictions.
Right. So you got anything else to talk about, or are you finished?
No, been an interesting week, couple more games, and looking forward to the All-Star break, looking forward to maybe running into some of our listeners in New Orleans, and looking forward to see Anthony Davis being a great host and hopefully show out in the two events that he's in.
Yep. By the way, it irks me no end that Damian Lillard is in that many events. I'm sorry. I'm going to always have like a little bit of hate for Damian Lillard because he was quote unquote better than Anthony Davis in his rookie year.
Oh, I can't wait till we're healthy and winning so you could get over this.
Hate it.
Pedestrian hatred.
So thanks for listening to In the Know. It's always good to send you out on a little bit of hate. And we'll be back probably sometime during the All-Star break.